Okay, good afternoon, ladies. We're studying Perashat Vayeshev Yaakov. Right in the beginning of the Perashah, it says that Yaakov settled in the land of his father, in the land of Canaan. On this word, Vayeshev, the Yaakov Abinu settled, there's a famous midrash. The midrash says, "Bikesh Yaakov Abinu lishev b'shalva." It says that Yaakov Abinu wanted to sit in tranquility. Vayeshev, it means he sat, he wanted to relax. So miyad tukfo alav rukzoshil Yosef. So immediately God says, "You want to relax? Now I'm going to make you problems." And Yosef now, his son, is kidnapped, and he thinks he died, and the whole problem. So the question is obvious. First of all, what does it mean Yaakov wants to relax? I mean, he wanted to retire, he wanted to move to Florida. What does it mean he wants to take a break? Chas v'shalom Yaakov Aminu. What does it mean he wants to slow down? And what does it mean that God says, you want to relax? Okay, now I'm going to put you in the problem of Yosef. What's a punishment? Maybe he has a right to relax. So the explanation that Rav Shimon Schwab says, just to understand what Yaakov was doing, he explains he wanted to relax from one service of God and begin another service of God. But he wasn't relaxing. It was just changing his focus a little. Avraham Avinu, for example, his whole life was spent spreading the word of God. He gave classes. He built altars. He made seminars. He brought people back to religion. As the Pasuk says by Avraham, Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He called out in the name of God. So he was busy all his life with people. Yitzhak the same. Wherever he went, he had encounters with people. He publicized the name of God. He continued the work, the public work, of where his father left off. And the Pasuk says by Yitzhak the same, Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He called out in the name of God. And Yaakov Avinu, in the beginning of his life, did the same. He went, he built altars, he was involved with the people, he taught the messages that he learned from his father and grandfather. But at the end of his life, Yaakov Avinu said, now it's time for me to deal with my family. Anything wrong? Let me take care of my children. Let me raise them. Let me give them the proper chinuch. So he changed already his focus. He said, I'm going to be less public in trying to make God's name well known. And I'll be more introvert. I'll be more into myself, into my family, which is also a great mitzvah. But God said, you want to relax, not from life, not from religion. You want to relax from this holy mission of publicizing my name in the world, which is a path that your father and grandfather took. You cannot do this. So God put Yaakov Avinu back into the other business. How? By making the whole story of Yosef. You think about it. What was the direct result of the story of Yosef? He went down to Egypt. And as a result, the brothers subsequently followed him down to Egypt. And as a result, Yaakov ended up in Egypt with Yosef. And as a result, you had the whole Jewish nation, which at that time was 70 people, living in Egypt. And what do you think they were doing? They started to publicize the name of God again in a foreign land. So God said, you want to relax from publicizing my name? Says Rav Shimon Schwab, Borei Olam brought him the story of Yosef in order to put him back in that mission, to bring him to Egypt, in order that he could begin again to start publicizing the name of God and make a Kiddush Hashem when they see how the Jewish people act, and maybe some of them were inspired to convert. The Torah in this Perashah tells us one of the most difficult subjects, and of course it's difficult in this venue to go through it in detail, but I'd just like to say one point. The story of Yosef and the brothers. There's a great misconception on this rivalry between Yosef and the brothers. It is misunderstood and misconstrued by many people into thinking that this is a typical case of sibling rivalry. You know, it happens in all our families. You know, children fight with each other. The mother comes home with a toy for one of the kids, and the other kids start crying. I want it. You didn't buy me one. So it happens with adults also. Not with toys, but with money and with property and things. And so when we read this story, we think that we can relate. We say, oh, yeah, okay, so the brothers, after all, Yosef was favored by his father. Torah tells us that. He made him the coat, the technicolor coat, Ketonet Pesim. So the brothers resented him. So there was one of those type of acrimonious relationships in the family of Yaakov. And to that I tell you, ladies, if you learn one thing today, heaven forbid, that is the farthest thing from the truth. There is no semblance to anything that we know about arguments and fights when you're talking about the Shevatim. I want you to remind you, the tribes are called Shevteya, the tribes of God. God puts his name on the tribes, which means they were all pure, they were all holy. And anything they did was done with calculation, and was done with thought, and was done, at least in their eyes, trying to follow the halakha, and trying to do what's right. In this case, they perceived Yosef as a pursuer. In Hebrew, we call that a rodef. Rodef would mean, let's say, God forbid, somebody's coming after us, chasing us with a gun. He's called a rodef. Jewish law says, if somebody's coming after to kill you, halakha says kill him first. Which means, if that fellow that's being pursued turns around and shoots and kills, according to the Torah, he's innocent. He's not considered a murderer. And Hachamim say it, Haba lehorgecha, hashkim lehorgo. Someone that comes to kill you, beat him to it and kill him first. So the brothers felt that Yosef was pursuing them. How? First of all, he went to the father Yaakov and started to tell over certain things that Yosef felt the brothers were doing wrong. Furthermore, Yaakov did favor Yosef. He taught him one-on-one. He passed over all the Torah messages to him. So the brothers said like this, we see a pattern here. Avraham, our grandfather, had two sons. Yishmael was sidetracked, and Yitzhak became the primary heir to the throne. Yitzhak had two sons. Esav was sidetracked. And Yaakov became the heir to the throne. So they were scared. They said the same thing's happening now. It seems that Yosef is trying to weed us out in order that he will become the successor to the line. And the brothers said, why is he doing that? We're tzaddikim. We're not Ishmael. We're not Esav. We're good people. But they misunderstood Yosef's actions and their father's behavior, as if for some reason Yosef is trying to push the brothers out of becoming the heirs to Israel, the heirs of Am Yisrael. So they thought he was a pursuer, that ultimately he'll come to try to kill them. He'll do whatever it takes in order to get them out. And the brothers knew that they were deserving of such a role. So they said, before he kills us, we have to at least knock him out. Now, of course, it's much deeper than that. But you see, it's not fair. These were grown men. Now, I want a coat also. So they were rich people. So go buy a coat. Go make yourself a coat. So it wasn't an issue of only the coat. There were issues over here of how Am Yisrael is going to be formed. And out of love of God, and out of love to be the successor of Avraham and Yitzhak, with religious intent, and I'm not talking about zealotry, like God forbid the craziness of the jihad and all that stuff. In religious intent, with source in halakha, they were following Shulchan Aruch in their mind, at least. And the proof of the pudding is, even later on, in a few weeks from now, when we read the parasha, and we read how they went down to Egypt, and they saw things were going wrong for them. They saw that it was Yosef, but they didn't know it was Yosef. He was treating them very difficult, and they were having a hard time. They were They were suspected as spies. Then they left Egypt. They found that their money was returned to them. Who put the money in the bag? Then they saw the goblet. So they thought to themselves, they said, why is this happening to us? And they came to the conclusion that maybe we were a little rough with Yosef. They didn't come to the conclusion maybe what we did is wrong. Just even after all the bad things were happening. Simple. What do you mean what's happening to you? You sold your brother as a slave. It's black and white what you did wrong. No, they didn't say it was wrong. If everything was... They said, we followed the Shulchan Aruch. We followed the Halakha. We had to do what we had to do. It's just maybe we did it with a little extra cruelty. You know, maybe we did it with a little extra resentment or something like that. So therefore God's punishing us for the way we did it. Not why we did it. To show you in their minds, they felt that they were in the right. Now I want to show you Yosef. When he went to the father, his father, and he told over certain things the brothers were doing. I want to show you how pure the tribes were. The Pasuk writes, "Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'a el avihim." And Yosef brought some words about the brothers to their father. So the obvious question, I mean, to their father. It's his father also. I mean, to their father. He is the son of the same father. Why does it say el avihim? And secondly, the word vayaveh. It says he brought. When I'm bringing you information, you don't use the word bringing. You say, he spoke. It should say, vayseper. It should say, and he communicated. When you bring something, it's a tangible item. You bring a box, you bring a pen. You don't bring words. Why does it say, vayaveh Yosef? And Yosef brought the words, the problems about the brothers. So I saw an explanation from a rabbi called Afikeyam. Listen to the beauty of Yosef. Halakha writes in the laws of Lashon Hara, which we always say how important it is to study those laws of Lashon Hara. If you study nothing else in Jewish law, you have to know the laws of Lashon Hara. You have to know it good. And until you know the laws of Lashon Hara, better not to speak about anything. Don't talk about people until you know until you learn the laws. Don't rationalize on yourself and say this is permissible, it's okay, they don't care. And then just in the past few weeks, I've seen people's lives turned into great havoc only because of a few words that people spoke. Not intentional, maybe intentional, but just a few words that were passed around and it caused people great sorrow. You have to be careful. So here, Halakha writes, if somebody's doing something wrong, and you're unable to rebuke them because you feel they won't listen to you, Halakha writes you're allowed to go to their father or to their rabbi and discuss the issue in order that the rabbi or the father will correct the problem. But Halakha writes you have to go l'shem shamayim. You can't go with intent to hurt. You can't go with inside ulterior motives. You know, when you walk away, you say, I got him, he's going to get in trouble, beauty. If you're an enemy of that person, you're not allowed to do it, because then it'll be construed as you're trying to take a revenge. So it has to be done with 100% pure motives, without any has v'shalom, any type of personal grudge that one is bearing. And certainly you're not allowed to exaggerate the story, which is the nature of people. You know, when you're trying to impress upon a rabbi how bad the guy did, what he did, so, you know, you're going to tell it that it's unbelievable and you don't understand, and you might add some salt and pepper to the story so it'll be clear to the rabbi or to the father, oh, this guy's bad, we have to fix it. But according to Halakha, you're not allowed to exaggerate. You have to say it as it is. That's difficult. Yosef, it says, Vayaveh Yosef. Yosef brought the report to his father, which means he brought it. He didn't tell it over. He brought it as it was, like a mailman delivering the mail. He brought it. Could the mailman change the mail? The mail's the mail. He's just delivering it. Vayaveh. He just transferred the information from here and he brought it to there. to show you Yosef was so honest that he wasn't looking to make a story, to make a thing. He just told it over as it was and let Yaakov Avinu decide if what the brothers did, is it right or not. Hence, Vayaveh. But even further, it says he told the story to their father. What does it mean he told the story to their father? So the explanation they say is that he did not want the fact that he was the son of Yaakov also, that maybe because it's me telling it to you and I'm your son, so maybe you'll take it with a little extra credence and a little extra. So the Torah writes, El Avihem, the fact that Yaakov was his father played no role in his action. He went to not my father, he went to their father in order to show he didn't want to come as a pull rank and say, well, listen, I'm your favorite son, and what I lied to you, I'm telling you. He went with such a pure intention, you're not my father now. I'm telling you a fact, you're their father. In order that it shouldn't play any role in the speaker, to show you he divested himself from any personal vendetta. So anybody that can claim that this was personal, that they were trying to get each other, look at the sensitivity at every move that was being done, whether it's the brothers, whether it's Yosef, it's all calculated according to the halakha. Now, the Torah then says, the brothers went out and did some shepherding. So Yaakov tells Yosef, go out and see what's going on with your brothers. And this is where all the trouble started. And come back and report to me and tell me what's happening. Now we have a rule. Listen to a rule. Shiluhem mitzvah enam nizukim. Those people that are going on mitzvah missions, the Gemara says, cannot get damaged. You're going to do a mitzvah, the mitzvah will protect you. So there's one opinion that says the mitzvah protects you only on the way there. But when you finish the mitzvah and you're coming back, the mitzvah doesn't protect you. So that's why if you ever notice when sometimes people travel, somebody gives you a dollar and they tell you, put it in tzedakah when you come back. So in order, they'll make you a mitzvah carrier, not only on the way there, but on the way back. So therefore, the mitzvah will protect you on the way back. If you tell, give it over there, finish it, you'll be safe going. But coming back, you have no mitzvah to protect you. So they say, give it when you come back, in order the mitzvah will be with you on the way back. Now, that's what Yaakov Avinu was trying to do to his son. He said, go see what's going on with the brothers. That's mitzvah. He moved that v'ayim. He's fulfilling his father's will. That's a mitzvah. But that'll protect them going. But what's going to protect them coming back? So he says, I don't only want you to go, but I want you to come back and tell me what's going on with them. So therefore, he was a mitzvah carrier going and coming. So now the question is strong. How did he get damaged? If he was on a mission going, coming, how'd the brothers kidnap him? How'd the brothers end up throwing him in a pit, eventually selling him to Egypt? He should have came back. So the Orach Chaim HaKadosh gives an answer, which is very important to know, and this answers some other unfortunate cases. The answer, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, is that this seemingly damage that happened to Yosef ultimately was good. Ultimately was very good. Because the rabbis tell us the Jews had to go down to Egypt. That was fact. Already God told Abraham that many years before. Your children, your grandchildren are going to be in Egypt for 400 years, for 200 years, whatever it is. They're going to be slaves. So everybody knew that, by the way. This is in the books. They were talking about this before it happened. Now, there was two ways we could have went down to Egypt. We could have went down to Egypt in the probable way, with balls and chains connected to our legs, and some foreign nation dragging us down in handcuffs and enslaving us in a very difficult way. Instead, God had mercy on us, and he brought us down to Egypt the eventual exile with a red carpet. Look how he set it up for us. The brothers sell Yosef to Egypt. He eventually becomes the viceroy. He wields a lot of power. Eventually the brothers come down. Yosef is able to set them up. They had their own city of Goshen. They had their own ghetto. Yaakov was able to come with dignity, build the yeshiva in Mizraim. And for as long as Yaakov Abinu was alive, the Jewish people were flourishing in Egypt and there were no problems. Look, at the end of the day, and Yosef says it himself, by the way, when the brothers plead for their lives, we're sorry, forgive us, we didn't know it was you. Yosef says, what are you talking about? Look what happened. You had bad intent, but God had good intent. Look what ended up happening. We brought us down to Egypt with respect. Instead of coming down like second-class citizens, here I'm the ruler, I'm in charge, I can afford you freedoms, and I can give you rights, and I can give you anything you like, but all's my friend. So at the end of the day, this seeming rough situation that Yosef endured was actually for the best. For the best of the family. So therefore, he didn't get damaged ultimately. Maybe temporarily he did. But the good in this case outweighed the bad. So ultimately it was for something good. With this concept, we might explain in recent events, I mean the past 2-3 years, we heard different tragedies in the community about people that were involved in mitzvot, whether going to do a mitzvah or returning from a mitzvah, and on the way back, God forbid, met a terrible, tragic fate, even met death, God forbid. Just recently, the Rosh Kolel, the Rosh Yeshivav, Chaim Sha'al, Rabbi Siman Tov Alav Shalom, who was a great man, there's no question about it. And he passed away coming out of a party after dancing on Sukkot, within a few minutes, after fulfilling a mitzvah of Simchat Bet HaShoevah. So how do you explain that? As he's resting to sit down from the sweat, from the Simcha of the mitzvah, so on the way back, he shouldn't be damaged. So the answer we're forced to say, in other cases of girls coming out of the mikveh, etc. So we're forced to say in these cases, although this looks like the greatest tragedy for us, but ultimately there must be a greater good for Am Yisrael, for the Jewish people. And therefore, in God's book, that is not considered a bad thing. Which means this is possible, maybe such an atonement saves millions of Jews from tragedy. So therefore, although it looks like, and it is, I'm not saying I understand this actually, but we're forced to say, because we know the rules, you came from a mitzvah, you're not supposed to get damaged. We're forced to say, whether we understand it or not, that there's an ultimate good. Just like in this case, you didn't see the ultimate good immediately. When it was happening, you said these things. Until years later, when the Jews came down to Egypt with red carpet. Oh, see that? If that didn't happen, then... So ultimately it was a nice thing. So that's maybe the way we have to explain, just again, food for thought, how to explain these tragic events. But of course, I'm not qualified to even give an opinion on those things that are beyond our mind, but I'm just giving you something that you could toy with. Furthermore, after Yaakov finds out that his Yosef, his favorite son, is seemingly dead, the Pasuk writes, and I'll quote it, it says, Vayikra Yaakov simlotav, he rips his garments in mourning. Vayasem sak bimotav, he puts sackcloth on his legs. Vayitabel al beno yamim rabim, and he mourns his son for many days. Vayakumu kol banav v'chol benotav lenachamo, so all Yaakov's sons and his daughters, they all came to console him. Vayma'en lehitnachem, and he refused to be consoled. And all the rabbis ask, it doesn't tell us in the Pasuk what they said. Usually a person goes to make, say, a shiva call. So he has a certain thing in his mind. What is he going to tell the person in order to console them, to make them feel good?
So here it says they got up, his own children, to console him, and he refused to be consoled. What did they say? So I saw a wonderful explanation. They didn't say anything. When a person, bar minnan, loses a child, if that's his only child, then it's very hard to console that person. But if he left over many children, many boys and many girls, if he left over a family, children, grandchildren, etc., so the biggest consolation might be, you still have a family. It's terrible, it's bad, but at least be consoled with the leftovers, with us. So the Pasuk says, Vayakumu kol banav v'chol benotav, they got up to console him. What does it mean? They just got up and stood in front of him. They didn't say anything. What they were really trying to give a message to Yaakov, their father and grandfather. Look, we're here. So therefore, be consoled. So, Yaakov Avinu doesn't get consoled. Why? It's a good thing they told him. Why? He's not happy that he has these children. So the explanation they say is like this. Halakha writes that while it's important to mourn for somebody that passes away, Hakamim, in their genius, in their brilliance, they made systems 7 days, 30 days, 1 year. Not that, God forbid, we're comparing the wisdom of our Hakamim to the wisdom of psychology, what they say today. But it's clear that the greatest minds in the secular world, the Havdim, all agree that there must be a grieving period. And there must be a time to cry, and there must be a time to mourn, and it has to get easier, and we have to get over it. Look at the Hakamim, 2,000 years ago already, they set that system up. Telling you exactly, now you can start doing this, because they understand the human being has to move on. But now it's too early to do that. Don't go to a wedding yet. Everything was set up perfectly. So the Gemara says, but after the time that the Torah tells you to mourn, you're supposed to move on. And the Gemara says, if you don't, if you cry too much and you're upset too much, God forbid, God says, bar minnan, you'll have another reason to cry. Which means, after a time, you have to accept it. So after you don't accept, a year's over, finish. Okay, accept it, finish, move on. Are you still crying? You're still upset? So you're saying, what, you're more compassionate than me? You're telling God, well, I made a mistake, I don't know what I'm doing. I did it, finish, accept it. I gave you a year to mourn and to cry. So you're still not accepting it? Bar minnan. So that's what happened over here with Yaakov Avinu's children. They were scared. They saw their father, he's not getting over it. So they were worried about their own lives. So they stood in front of their father in order to console him, which means that have mercy on us. Because if you don't get over this problem, you're jeopardizing our safety. Yaakov Avinu then answers and says, Vayomer ki ered el beni avel she'ola. I'm not mourning on my son. I got over that already. But you see, Yaakov was mourning something else. He was mourning himself. Because he was told by God previously that he's going to have 12 tribes. And the 12 tribes are going to be the pillars of Am Yisrael, of the future of our people. But if one of them dies in your lifetime, that's a reflection on you, and you're going to end up in Gehinnom. Which means Yaakov Avinu, when he saw Yosef, says, okay, died, I got over Yosef. But he said, it must be there was a flaw in me. Must be I did something wrong. So he was bemoaning his own fate. And at the end, that wasn't true. Yosef didn't die, so don't get so upset, ladies. Yosef was alive, and Yaakov ends up in Gan Eden. But Yaakov in his mind didn't know that at that point. So Yaakov Avinu, he's I'm not mourning my child. You don't have to worry about yourself. I got over Yosef. But I'm worried about myself. And then the Torah writes, Vayevk oto aviv. It says, Yitzhak Avinu was alive at this time. And when Yitzhak saw his son grieving, it's probably the worst thing for a father to have to see a child going through the mourning process. So it says Yitzhak Avinu also started to cry. He was crying, but who was he crying for? It says Vayevk Oto. He was crying for who? Not Yosef. He got over Yosef also. He was crying for Yaakov Oto. Because he said Yaakov Avinu, his whole life, his whole legacy, everything is... What's going to be with him? He's upset. He lost it. That's it. God told him. And that's exactly how we explain it. But we've said in previous years, and it's worth it to repeat it again, Borei Olam did make it in the world that after a year of mourning, a person is able to forget. Bar Minan, on the day that the tragedy happens, people vow, I'll never sing again, I'll never dance again, I'll never go out in public again. That's the feeling that they have. But as time goes by, as they say, time heals all wounds, and therefore you start to come out of it. So the question then is, how come Yaakov Avinu didn't get out of it? So some of the rabbis explained very simply. Because Yosef wasn't dead. This gift of forgetting, this gift that God gave us to recover, is only when somebody dies. Then God sets a new process in the brain to forget. But if the child's alive, so you'll never recover because he didn't die yet. And that's an important point to know, because the rabbis tell us, anybody that mourns Jerusalem, כל המתאבל על ירושלים זוכה ורואה בשמחתה. Merits and sees its happiness. What simply is explained, that if you mourn Jerusalem, you fast on Tisha B'Av, you fast on Asara B'Tevet, you fast on Shiva Asara B'Tammuz, you commemorate all these tragic days, so you suffered with Jerusalem, you'll enjoy when the Beit HaMikdash is built, and they're going to have parties and everything, they're going to take a list. You face the Shabbat, you wore non-mother shoes, okay, you can come with us. During the 3 weeks, okay, come with us. They're going to have a list of who was invited to the party. So you mourn for Jerusalem, you can dance with Jerusalem. So the rabbis asked a question. If you look at the way the rabbis made that statement, it says, whoever mourns for Jerusalem, zoche ve-ro'eh. That's in the present tense. It should say, Yizkeh v'yireh. In the future, he will merit and see. What does it mean? As if he's meriting now. If his happiness is now. Well, what do you mean? Zocheh v'ro'eh. And the explanation is like this. Somebody that's mourning Jerusalem, his happiness is immediate. Because if we're still mourning Jerusalem, after 2,000 years of destruction, if we didn't forget Jerusalem yet, what does that mean, ladies? That means Jerusalem is still alive. That means it didn't die. Because if Jerusalem was totally spiritually dead, we would have forgot about it after a year. So the greatest sign that Jerusalem will come back is that Jews, 2,000 years later, are still crying about it. Just like Yaakov was crying for Yosef because he didn't die. That means Jerusalem's not dead. So the fact that we're mourning will give you a happiness in the present. When you see people fasting on the fast days, it should give you a consolation. And say, Baruch Hashem, if we're still crying for Jerusalem, that's an indication that there's still some life left. And therefore God will resurrect that city. And resurrect the Temple Mount and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. That is the Nechama. Zocheh v'ro'eh b'nechama. Go a little further in the Perasha. The story of Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. Potiphar was his boss. He was in charge of the butchers, it says, Rav Tabachim, that's who he worked for. And the wife of Potiphar, wanted to commit something illicit with Yosef. Yosef was very handsome.
And it says every day she tried to do something in order to cause Yosef to fall and commit the sin. So it says, "Va'ika yom azeh va'yavo abayta lasot melachto." Yosef came home one day. He's doing his work. Ve'en ishman she'abayit sham ba'bayit, and he's alone. Pasuk writes, "Va'titpesehu bebigdo." So she grabs his garment. Lemor shekva immi. She says she says specifically what she wants. Vayazov bigdo biyada, so he leaves the garment in her hand and he runs. It says Vayanos Vayetzah Usa, he runs. Vahikirotaki azab bigdo biyada, so she's holding his shirt. Vayanos Hosan, he ran out. But Tikral and Shebeta, so now she frames him. She calls all the people of the house, the Tomelem, the Morde, ooh, look what happened. Vilanu Ishavrid. The husband brought this Jew in the house, a Sahegmanu, to fool around with us. Ba'elai came to me, he wanted to do this, I called out. He tried to make Avon. He heard me yell, so he ran out, he took my garment. So the rabbis say a few points here. At the end, Yosef is thrown in jail because of this. Shimon Schwab points out, don't think Potiphar believed his wife. Potiphar knew that Yosef was innocent. How? So if you look at the words of Mrs. Potiphar, she's inconsistent. In the beginning, she says, look, they brought us a Jewish boy, letzachek banu, to fool around with us. That doesn't say anything illicit. It's just fooling around. Then, when Potiphar comes home, but tedaber elav, she tells her husband, kedevarima ele lemor, ba elai ha'ev debriya shirvet alanu letzachek me. Again, he's fooling around with me. She didn't say anything yet. I called out, he ran out. And then she told the husband, "Kedevarim ha'ele asali avdecha." Then she says, he did this and this to me. So Potiphar says, hold on, you just told me you're saying, screaming, fooling around. Now all of a sudden she changes her story and says, no, he actually. So something's fishy over here. So he realized what she was up to. She's trying to frame Yosef. And now he has no choice. What is he going to do? Take Yosef's side or take his wife's side? So he has no choice, even though he knows Aziz Yosef is innocent. And Yosef doesn't deserve the punishment, but his wife is his wife. So the Pasuk writes, Vayihar apo. He got angry. Says Rav Shimon Schwab, who did he get angry at? At his wife. He didn't get angry at Yosef. He knows Yosef is innocent. But he got angry at his wife. Why would she do such a thing? Why is she framing such a tzaddik? So the next pasuk writes, "Vayikach Adonai Yosef." So the master of Yosef took him and put him in jail, which means Potiphar doesn't fire him. He still calls himself the master of Yosef, which means he still respected him. If such a person would do that to his master's wife, he still calls himself the master. He'd fire him on the spot. Get out of here! You're nothing. You're dirt. To show you that Potiphar still respected him, and that's why he puts him in a special prison. Because if you think about it, eventually the butler and the baker of Paro are going to make a sin, and they're going to get thrown into jail. Now you'd imagine that these people worked in the cabinet; they were cabinet members. The butler and the baker were high-ranking officials. You'd figure that the jail that they're going to get thrown into is like, it's not a country club, but it's a higher level jail. It's not, it's not the maximum security prisons that you put a regular petty thief. And who happens to be in that jail with the butler and the baker? Yosef. Isn't that strange? Yosef is a Jew. In Egypt, the Jews are not looked on favorably. He's a worker. And he was committed to doing something to Potiphar's wife. He gets thrown into the same prison with the butler and the baker. That means what? That Potiphar, deep down, knew he wasn't guilty. but he had to save face with his wife, so to protect Yosef, he puts him in a, you know, a more comfortable. Don't get me wrong, it was no comfortable. The Egyptian prisons, even the best of the prisons, was Gehinnom. But at least you see the attitude of Potiphar. The last idea that we'll say is probably the four most important words in the entire parasha. So Yosef is in prison. So Yosef is in prison, and now the butler and the baker are there. Now, you have to imagine, as we said, these two people are high-ranking officials. They're elitists. They're working for Paro. When we say butler, I want to remind you, ladies, the butler was a very prestigious job, by the way. It was like a bartender. The butler meant that the king trusted this man more than anyone. He was like a security advisor. He's in charge of making sure nobody poisons the soup, nobody poisons the wine. Now, you need a trustworthy, loyal, inside man to do such a job. So when we say butler and baker, it's more like these are advisors to Paro. So they get thrown into prison because the fly in the wine, and there was a couple of stones in the bread. You know the story. Now, you can imagine when they see Yosef in prison, dirty Jew, in their mind, this is what they're thinking. You know, they're going to talk to this guy over here. We're Hashuv people. We're important. What is he even doing in the same system as we are? So you can imagine they have nothing to do with Yosef. And then one morning they wake up, and that's after the night they had a dream. They both had dreams, and they had very funny dreams, and they were recurring dreams, and they didn't know what they meant. You know, sometimes a person has a dream, he goes crazy. What is God telling me? What does it mean? Am I going to live? Not this, that. So you can sometimes, it's visible on your face that something's bothering you. Yosef goes up to them, and he tells them, Madua penechem ra'im hayom. What's the matter? Why are your faces drawn today? Why are you so upset? These four words change the course of history. As a result of that question, they tell them the dreams. Yosef interprets the dreams. As a result of that, the butler gets his job back. Paro ends up having a dream. He needs an interpretation. The butler says, oh, there was a guy in jail. He interpreted my dream. They bring him out. Yosef interprets. Becomes the... Imagine if Yosef would have been not concerned like he was about somebody else's grief. Imagine Yosef would have said, hey, they look upset, but I'm not going to get involved from me. Get involved. Leave me alone. I don't want to know from these people. They don't talk to me. I'm not talking to them. It's their own problem. Good for them. The lesson over here of Yosef is you have to be concerned with people. When you see somebody upset, it's an obligation to go up to them if you have the capability and if you have the know-how and you have the right tact in order to go up to them to alleviate their suffering. Maybe somebody needs an encouragement. Maybe somebody needs a good word. Maybe somebody needs a compliment just to get them out of a bad mood or a rut that they're in. I don't have to tell you the advantages of what a good word could do to somebody when they're having a bad day or they're going through a rough time. When they hear a word of chizuk, or they hear a little kind word that comes out of somebody else's mouth in order to show a little sympathy, it means the world to people. Here Yosef is teaching us you have to be decent people. After all, we're in the same jail. So they woke up one morning upset. He could have said, it's not my problem. And if he would have said that, history would have been all different. Who knows? How would Yosef ever get to the palace? And the whole thing changes. But because he had enough derech eres, because he had enough decency, when he saw people in his same cell, a little down, he went up and said, good morning. He told them, how can I help you? What are you so upset about? Is anything I could do? Those few words, look at the value of them. Look what it brought. From here we learn that sometimes the greatest hasadim, sometimes the greatest favors, doesn't have to. You don't have to build an institution. You don't have to give millions of dollars to charity necessarily. Nor do you have to go and save the world in order to be charted down for chesed. Sometimes chesed can manifest itself in a hello, in a good morning, and how do you do? Is everything okay? How's your family? How are your children? Is there anything I can do for you? Simple words like that can make all the difference in somebody's life. I'll just give you one story without mentioning names. There was a lady, and she was all upset at different things, and happened to be, my wife gave her a call to thank her for something that she had done for her. And on the phone, my wife took it as an opportunity to also be appreciative of what this lady is doing for other people. She wasn't calling for that, but you have her on the phone, let me give her a little chizuk, a nice word. And the lady on the other side of the phone broke down crying and says, you don't understand. I had such a difficult week, and I felt that I wasn't appreciated, and people are talking about me, and people give me a... It couldn't have come, this compliment or this appreciation, at a better time. So that's a case where you didn't even have an indication that somebody was upset. And you see the value of a good word. All the more so, when we see somebody upset, it's a mitzvah to take four words and say, Madua penechem, Have a good day, ladies.